we investigate reports of burger snatchers in the form of herring gulls on Grafton Street.
There was a chap with a burger and another guy with him, and the first gull immediately just shot into the face of the chap with the burger and forced the guy to drop his hand. He lurched down, hit the burger very hard onto the ground, and the second gull was on it in a second.
You can email mooney@rte.ie or send a text message about anything at all right now to 51551. And a very good afternoon to you. Imagine that, burger thieves in the shape, in the form, in the person, if you can say person when you're talking about birds, of herring gulls on Grafton Street. Yeah, this actually happened. We have a report going up very shortly. But look, well, let me tell you who's here first of all. We've got Katrina is in today. Katrina, how are you?
Unsure.
Unsure, exactly. Colwell, Niall Hatch.
Unsure.
Unsure as well. Colwell, Brenda. Brenda is AWOL. Yes, exactly. She'll be here in a moment. Lots of stuff to talk about today, but let's first have a look at our herring gull camera on Nestwatch 2014. You can hear the soundtrack from it, the feed, the live feed from Nestwatch 14 in the background there, but nothing on the roof. They were there a moment ago. I saw the... Oh, hang on.
There's
a second.
Half a gull.
I can
there,
see
Derek.
Half a gull.
One of the adults up on top. I think it's one of the air conditioning vents.
Half
there.
An adult on top of an air conditioning vent on the roof. It's fantastic, this. It really is. Thousands of you logging on every day. Thank you very much indeed. Keep logging on. rte.ie/Mooney. Click on Nestwatch 2014, the herring gull. And that is on the rooftop of one of our buildings here on the grounds of RTE television. And they have laid two eggs. The two eggs hatched. So we've got two pretty mature looking chicks at this stage now,
yeah,
from Birdwatch Ireland.
They are, Derek. Yeah, that's right. It takes longer for large birds like gulls to grow to adulthood or to adult size than it would the blue tits, for example. So they're over a month old at this stage. This is the time when they start to get a bit more independent. And unlike a lot of baby birds that very quickly start to resemble their parents, these young gulls won't look like their parents really for another 3 years. It takes them a long time to reach what we call full adult plumage, where they get that lovely grey back and wings with the black wingtips. Until then, they're sort of mottled grey and brown, sort of very well camouflaged. And as each year goes by, they start to resemble the adults more and more. But for the first year of life, they look nothing like them. So although they look very different from their parents, they're rapidly approaching that size. They have voracious appetites. They're being fed all the time. I've been watching them online, and they're doing very well. They are much more mobile than most baby birds are, so that's why they aren't in shot at the moment. They wander all over that rooftop. So for the first few days, they were mostly around the nest. But now they wander all over the place, but they do come back there. It seems to be where they feel most secure and safe. They often go back there to sleep, I notice. Mm. And so very often, if you log in first thing in the morning, you'll find them there. They've been sleeping for the night.
They really have an advantage over other birds who don't nest or haven't chosen to nest on such a remote location. I say such a remote location because when you think of gulls, they're colony nesters in many ways.
Yes.
They nest very close together.
I mean,
if you go to Howth and look at the rooftops, you'll see a lot of gulls on the rooftops in Howth at this time of year. This is the time of year you'll see it.
Exactly.
And when you see them on cliff faces, you'll see them all there together nesting side by side. These guys are slightly isolated. They're on their own little cliff top here in RT, on their own little island away from everybody else. So it gives them an advantage. There's no competition around, really.
That's exactly right. And when you say it's like an island, that's exactly what they're looking for. These birds would traditionally, for millennia, have nested on offshore islands, and many of them still do, all around the Irish coast. And indeed,
but not alone.
No, indeed. You could normally have big numbers there. Mm. But what's happened is a lot of those colonies have become less suitable for them, particularly there's problems with rats and so on them. So what's happened is they've moved more inland. And yes, we're getting some of these pioneers starting to nest on these rooftops, and because they're not under the same sort of pressure from predators in there, they don't really need so many pairs of eyes looking out for danger. So it's in their interest to reduce that competition, and so they're very vigilant. They're very good parents. They're very safe up there. So they've actually chosen a remarkably good location.
Yeah, they really have. Yeah. And listen, do log on, have a look. It's a bit like spot the birdie, spot the birdie. Remember, spot the pigeon,
yeah, spot the pigeon. Pigeon.
But anyway, it's spot the herring gull,
spot
the herring gull. No, well, no, not quite spot the ball.
All right,
no,
okay.
It's not a ball. But anyway, go on, have a look. rte.ie/Mooney, and look at Nestwatch 2014, and you will see them appearing around the nest at various times of the day. That has an infrared camera, so you can see it 24 hours a day in black and white in the evening. It looks quite striking, and when it's raining, it is beautiful to watch.
It is. Yeah.
Mind you, I saw them today, the two young birds, having little flights.
Yes,
about 2 or 3 inches off the ground. I shouldn't be saying inches. About 10 centimetres off the ground.
That's right. And it's very important now at this stage of their development. Their wing feathers are growing in, and they grow very rapidly.
They do.
And so they've had to strengthen those flight muscles because, you know, their first flight will be off the edge of a roof, so they don't want to plummet. They've quite a drop if they do. So they really are practicing and training. And that's
it's fun because I saw one do it, and the other one kind of looking at it rather curiously, and then thinking, "Well, I can do that." And he put his wings out, and he went up a little bit and came down. Fantastic to see.
Amazing.
It really is terrific. It's very educational. Go on. on, do it now. And speaking of herring gulls, Ken Whelan, our man on fish, Ken left a message on the phone yesterday about something he observed on Grafton Street. Have a listen to this.
I was moving down Grafton Street yesterday evening. I was going to meet some friends, and there was a fantastic busker working just outside of Brown Thomas's. And I paused for a moment to listen to his sounds, and I turned around, and in an instant, right in front of me, a very, very large herring gull swooped down. And immediately behind the herring gull was a second, equally large gull. There was a chap with a burger and another guy with him. And the first gull immediately just shot into the face of the chap with the burger. And I think it was the flapping of his wings that forced the guy to drop his hand. Immediately then he lurched down, hit the burger very hard onto the ground, and the second gull was on it in a second and making absolutely certain that nobody was going near the burger or the bun. The two of them then got to the ground, they ate a few morsels, and then each of them took either the burger or the bun and headed back up onto the roof. And certainly by the squawks that were going on up on the roof, I would imagine there might very well have been a family up on the roof waiting for tea. I was absolutely amazed. First of all, in terms of the audacity of the two birds, but certainly it wasn't the first time that they'd done it. And secondly, it is always a shock when you see the size of a herring gull, and to have one flying down on a summer's evening into a very busy street, and then to have a second one follow on with the width of the wings, the breadth of the wings, the power of the birds. It was quite extraordinary, and it certainly put pay to anyone paying attention to the poor guy who was busking outside of Brown Thomas's. It's a real case of the birds, there's no doubt about that. Certainly when they fly down into your face, and I think people will enjoy seeing it happen, except for the poor person whose burger is stolen or who gets a fright when this huge big animal appears in front of their face.
So, is it happening? Is it a regular occurrence? We wondered, Katrina. So you went out this morning to Grafton Street.
Yes, we went out this morning to Grafton Street to see if we could recreate what Ken Whelan experienced yesterday and what he witnessed yesterday. So myself and Niall took ourselves off to Grafton Street, and we stood around. It was a very busy day. We stood around. We observed the gulls as they flew around.
So there were plenty of gulls around,
were there? There were gulls around, yeah, on both sides of Stephen's Green End and the Trinity College End, and there were pigeons around as well. And then we tried to recreate the experiment. Niall very bravely offered to be the guinea pig and offered to go in to McDonald's and buy a burger and stand in the middle
of
Grafton Street and see did anything happen. And we also spoke to some local people who were working in the area to see if they had come across any of these aggressive herring gulls. So this is how we got on. We were on Grafton Street just earlier today before we came to air. Niall, we're here standing outside McDonald's on Grafton Street on a very busy Wednesday lunchtime. Loads of tourists, loads of people coming in and out having their lunch, and looking around, quite a few herring gulls in the sky.
There are. I'm watching them flying between the buildings. You only get little glimpses of them because they're just coming and going. There's a lot of building work going on at the moment too, so there's a lot of scaffolding here where they can perch. And of course, at one end of the street we have Trinity College, where there's lots of people milling around as well. At the other end we have St. Stephen's Green, where people will go to feed the ducks, to have their lunch as well. So these birds know what they're doing. They're in an area where there's lots of food, and it's been a traditional haunt for them. They've been here for many, many years all over Dublin, particularly around Grafton Street, but in recent years only that they've started to nest here too, which is very interesting behaviour.
Well, of course, they need flat roofs to nest, and we have quite a few as we look up, don't we?
We do. This is perfect for them because, of course, they need flat roofs because eggs will roll off, and gulls don't really build very substantial nests, as anyone who's been watching Derek's gulls there nesting on the RTÉ roof will know. So these roofs would be perfect for them. A lot of them even have little railings or barriers around the edge, so they're a bit protected from the elements. There's lots of chimneys as well, and they will tend to shelter in between those or beside those, so they're the worst of the elements. Also, in a city like this, it does tend to be a bit warmer than the surrounding countryside. It's been a fairly warm summer so far, so it's been good for the gulls, but when bad weather does strike also, then they're a bit more protected than they would be otherwise. You have a supply of fresh water down in St. Stephen's Green, where it's very easy for them to bathe. They don't have to travel too far, so they seem to know what they're about.
Now, Ken Whelan thought that perhaps the herring gulls he witnessed yesterday were nesting up on the roof of Brown Thomas. Could they be?
We're right beside Brian Thomas now, looking up at it. It's hard to see the shape of the roof, but yes, they could well be. There's a good vantage point up there for them. It seems nice and protected and safe. And of course, it has the streets around it. As far as the gulls are concerned, this is really an island. The streets here with pedestrians on them may as well be rivers or sea. Of course, this area being pedestrianised most of the time also means that there's less disturbance in terms of noise. I mean, we do have buskers and lots of chatter on the street, but it's not quite the same as hearing engines going by all the time. So that could be another reason they would be nesting there. So it does seem to be a good site for that. Herring gulls, even though they are increasing in cities, they're actually an endangered species in Ireland. They have been declining over the last few decades, and a lot of the traditional areas where they would have nested around Dublin Bay and on islands like Lamb Bay and Ireland's Eye off Howth, they've become less attractive as nesting sites in recent years, partially because of human disturbance, but also because a lot of those islands have now become overrun with rats. With the gulls nesting on the ground, the rats can easily eat the eggs and chicks, and a lot of the gulls have moved away from those areas and have come into the city area. Ultimately, that's a man-made problem, so it's something that we human beings and the decision makers need to try and address this if it's becoming a problem for people having these gulls around the city. It is important to remember they are protected species and that attacks on people are very rare, but part of the reason that they might be going near people is because they've learned to associate humans with food, and that's never a good thing when it comes to wildlife.
Well, that's what Ken witnessed yesterday. He said that he saw a customer coming out of McDonald's with a burger in their hand. One herring gull swoops down and actually is in the customer's face trying to get the burger from that person. They drop the burger and a second gull is there like a shot to pick it up. Now, does that surprise you?
It does, yes, because normally aggressive behaviour from gulls that people report, it's usually when they're defending their nest. They're protecting their chicks or their eggs. That parental care kicks in, and that's understandable. Not pleasant, but it is understandable and explainable. Now, if some of these birds have learned that humans are an easy source of food and that they can attack them, it sort of mimics the way that they might treat other seabirds. They will sometimes steal food from other seabirds. It's what we call piracy among birds. And if they're learned to associate that with humans as well, that's not a good thing. It'd be interesting to see if they've realised as well that McDonald's here and some of the other fast food outlets are easy pickings as well. And certainly, especially when you go along here in the evening, you will find lots of discarded bits of burger and chips and things on the ground. So these birds could well learn to associate this particular location on Grafton Street with food.
And you do see them flocking around bins as well, don't you?
You do, and a big source of their food used to be going to landfill sites and feeding there. Now, that was their undoing in many respects over the years, because botulism started to develop there, caused by the bacteria that you'd get growing in the black bags. It actually killed a lot of the gulls, and that was really one of the factors in reducing their numbers. Things have become more sanitary. Access to those landfill sites is much more restricted, and obviously with wheelie bins now, they have much less access to refuse, so they're trying to find other sources of food. The same thing has happened with urban foxes in many areas. They used to raid bins a lot more easily than they do now, have to find other sources of food, perhaps becoming a bit more visible. Doesn't mean they're more numerous or more common than they were, just maybe more visible to our eyes.
Now, I wonder, would you be up for a tiny experiment?
Well, what have you got in mind for me?
Well, we might try and recreate what Ken Whelan witnessed yesterday. He said that somebody went in, they bought a burger, they came outside, they unwrapped it, and a gull swooped down, got the burger from the customer, but it was a little bit aggressive. Now, would you be up for trying out that little experiment?
I suppose I'm a bird professional. I'm wearing my glasses at the moment. I have my hat with me just in case, so why not?
Okay, well, let's give it a go.
Can I get you anything while you pull them in there?
Cheeseburger, please. Okay, in we go.
Hi, can I get a cheeseburger, please?
Yeah, would you like that single or double?
A single, please. Thank you very much. Okay. That was fast food, wasn't it?
It was very fast food. 5 seconds. Okay, so you've got your cheeseburger.
I have. We're walking outside, not putting my hat on.
There's building work going on here at the moment, so we're walking out under a kind of a
scaffolding. In now. Let's see what happens.
Okay. And your burger's unwrapped, and we're out back onto Grafton Street again.
Standing around, looking. I see some gulls over there coming from the Stephen's Green direction, but they don't seem to notice us. Anything the other direction, maybe coming from Trinity?
Not quite yet.
There's a pigeon coming down there now, but it's not paying any attention to us either. Should I try to take a bite? Maybe that'll make a difference.
Yeah, try.
Let's give it a go. Not seeing much happening at the moment.
But of course, their feeding times aren't like ours. They don't have breakfast, lunch and dinner at set times, do they?
No, they feed when they're hungry, and also they are driven by their chicks to feed when they start to squawk. Now, at this stage, a lot of the chicks will be becoming a little bit more independent. They won't be fully grown, they won't be flying yet, but they are fending for themselves a bit more. The parents spend less time around the nests. It could even be at this time of day that the parents may be off feeding themselves. bathing in Stephen's Green, perhaps, and just sort of taking a bit of time out from the chicks.
Well, I think you're safe enough. You can have your burger in peace. I don't think you're going to be attacked by any gulls. But maybe we should talk to some of the people who work around this area to see if they have spotted aggressive gulls on Grafton Street. There's building work going on right above McDonald's. There's scaffolding up and lots of builders. So maybe we'll try and talk to one of them.
Good idea, yeah.
Now, sir, sorry, you've got a high-vis jacket on and you seem to be working on the scaffolding here above McDonald's in Grafton Street. What are you guys up to?
Yeah, we're repairing the roof. And the seagulls attacking our roof.
Well, tell me about that, because you're up on the roof. You've got a bird's eye view of Grafton Street. So what's happening up on the rooftops?
Well, we have plastic to cover the roof, and there's pockets of water, and they're taking bats and pecking holes through the roof.
Okay, so you've got cheeky seagulls up there.
That's it, yeah. Very cheeky seagulls.
And any nesting seagulls up there?
Yeah, you can see them across the way on another building, two chicks.
The reason we're here today is because we got a report that yesterday a chap was coming out of here from McDonald's eating a burger and a herring gull flew down into his face and actually attacked him for the burger. Have you spotted any of that since you've been working on Grafton Street?
I haven't seen any of that, no. There's no fear in them. We have an owl and a falcon and they're not doing anything.
You have a decoy owl and a falcon up on the roof.
Yeah.
And this was to try and
keep them away.
Keep the gulls away.
They've been swooping down, attacking them. Uh-huh. And then sooner or later they find out nothing. Just do what they want to do and that's it.
It's very interesting about picking the holes in the plastic to access the water. Just how smart and how adaptable they are, because obviously here on Grafton Street we're not too far from St. Stephen's Green where there's ample supply of fresh water, but it seems they're not even bothering to go that far. They're just staying up here to do that. And it's an interesting sort of behavioural adaptation for the chicks as well, because maybe they'll continue doing this later in life too. They're sort of getting off to a bad start, I suppose.
Well, listen, we'll let you back to work and back up to the seagulls on the roof. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Now, Niall, opposite McDonald's, there's a gentleman sitting over there at a jewellery stall. He's selling scarves and hats and jewellery, and we might go and have a little word with him.
He's right opposite the entrance, so if anything's happening, he would certainly have the ringside seat.
He's sitting here looking into McDonald's front door all day long. Sorry, excuse me. We work with the Mooney Show on RTE Radio, and we're here today talking about seagulls.
Sure.
Are you permanently here? Is this your permanent spot on Grafton Street?
Yeah, I'd mostly be here on Saturday mornings, but at the moment I'm doing a few extra shifts here, so yeah, I'll be here during the week, watching people go by, watching the birds fly about.
Okay, and what's your name?
Greg.
Greg, we're here today talking about cheeky seagulls. We have a report that a customer came out of McDonald's yesterday with a burger, tried to take a bite out of it, and a herring gull, flew right down into the person's face, causing them to drop the burger. A second gull comes in, gets the burger, and off they go, free dinner. Do you ever see cheeky gulls around here?
I do. I mean, there's no accounting for taste with those seagulls involved. But I do, every now and again, I do see a couple of cheeky birds. And you see certain people who are quite nervous of birds getting a little bit hysterical when the birds swoop down. But yeah, I mean, it's such a confined area that they often perch just up high above the roof of the McDonald's building and kind of swoop down to pick up whatever scavenging bits they can get on the street.
So they're watching the whole time?
So, yeah, it appears they are watching us from above.
Have you ever seen them be aggressive with human beings, though?
No, I've seen them being confrontational with each other, but never necessarily aggressive with a particular individual, no.
How long are you on Grafton Street?
About 10 years. I mean, pigeons as well. You do see pigeons swooping down in between the crowds, and in which cases you do see people or hear people shrieking every now and again as a bird swoops down.
Well, pigeons, of course, are less threatening. Certainly people who have fears of birds will be often surprised. Pigeons will fly up right in front of them. It can be quite shocking, but they're not really capable of hurting a person. A gull would be. They're much heavier and bigger with sharper and stronger beaks. As Greg mentioned, with the gulls, they will get quite confrontational with each other. But it is very rare that they attack humans other than when they're defending the nest. Because when it comes to protecting the eggs and chicks, obviously that's all really important to them. Everything else is secondary, so they'll put themselves at risk. But for an easy meal in an area where there's plenty of other food available, if they just look a little bit harder, it's usually not really worth their while risking taking on a much bigger, stronger animal as we humans are.
So we've nothing really to fear. It's quite rare that a gull would come so close to a human being.
It is very rare, but though as gulls are nesting more and more in urban areas, it may be something we see an increase in. Certainly, I would encourage people not to feed gulls. Obviously, on the Mooney Show, we're all about asking people to feed birds in their gardens, especially in the wintertime. That's quite different. Those birds don't associate humans with food. They just think this food magically appears from somewhere. But gulls are very observant. They make their living trying to keep an eye out for food wherever it comes from. They're scavengers. Nothing wrong with that. They can actually perform a great service in an urban area, cleaning up rubbish and unwanted food. But people shouldn't deliberately feed them and try to break that connection between humans and food.
Brilliant. Greg, thanks a million. Nice to meet you.
You're very welcome. Have a nice day.
And Niall, thanks to you too. It's back to studio for us both.
Thanks.
And here we are back in the studio, and lots of text messages coming in. Apparently, Brenda has been on to say, not our Brenda, different Brenda.
Okay. Yeah.
And she says that M&S on Grafton Street were checking this, closed their outdoor rooftop cafe on Sunday last because gulls attacked customers on Saturday. Check it out, she says. Did they attack the customers now, or were they just looking for the food? Were they really attacking the customers? Because somebody else has been on to say, hi, Derek, I was disturbed by the sensational promotion of today's programme. Read birds attacking humans, which is incorrect and needs to be corrected. As a bird watcher, I'm sure you would not like to have gulls categorised in this way and vilified accordingly, says Pat McLaughlin. Now, come on, Pat. Editorial licence and all that. But at any rate, I didn't say the birds were attacking humans at all. I think Niall was pretty clear.
Niall,
who's the communications officer with Birdwatch Ireland. But go on anyway, Niall.
Look, I'm a bird lover. I love gulls. I watch them all my life. We would never want to do anything with casting a bad light.
But you're streaming live footage of the herring gull on the roof of RTE. Indeed, encouraging people to watch. And
it's all about balance. And the thing is, well, if this is a real issue, it's something that we want to track. Yeah, we're trying to get people to tell us where the gulls are nesting, if this is becoming a more widespread phenomenon. But the thing is, very often when there's problems with wildlife, it comes down to human beings being at fault at the end of the day. And I'm not saying that the people who had their burgers taken off them were in any way at fault.
No.
But at Stephen's Green, you know, people are feeding the ducks. People do feed the gulls as well. They do associate, the gulls do associate.
They're in for
food.
A free meal.
Yeah, exactly.
So
and
to speak.
They take the easy option, as many humans would as well. You know, it's just.
I wonder, are McDonald's employing the gulls? Are they trained gulls? So you come out with your burger and you're just munching into it and it nicks your burger and you got to go in and buy another one. And will McDonald's be on to me to sue me for that? Sensitive are McDonald's going to be? There's four mentions for McDonald's. Never say them again. Definitely deserve a free burger. Anyway, seagulls have all our rooftops destroyed, says our listener. They have set off our alarms. Even the children can't bring lunch into the school playground. Can you find out how to get rid of these birds? Asks Marie or Mari. You can't really.
You can't. No, it's something that would require a license from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. And you know, and we would encourage wherever possible as a conservation organisation in Birdwatch Ireland, we would encourage people to tolerate them where they can. Certainly, you know, it's a symptom of a wider problem. That their nesting islands, as we mentioned earlier, have become unsuitable for them in many areas, and this is them trying to adapt to those circumstances. So we humans have caused the problem, and we have a duty to protect these birds too. They don't bear us any ill will or malice. They're not capable of that. Just trying to defend their chicks and their young, and try to provide for them as well.
I'm just back from a holiday in Cornwall, and I noticed lots of buildings actually have spikes. Flat topped buildings have spikes on the roof, and this is to keep the seagulls away.
Oh, is it for the seagulls or the pigeons now?
Well, it could be for either, I suppose.
Because you'll notice that in some of the historic buildings in Dublin City Centre. I'm thinking of City Hall there, just off Parliament Street. They've got the spikes there, but to stop the pigeons from roosting up there.
Yeah.
And a lot of buildings have that because they do destroy the place with their guano, isn't that what they call it now?
Yes, exactly, the droppings. And you do see in city areas unnatural concentrations of pigeons. It's a fact of life, really, in major cities all around the world. So in London and New York and, you know, Toronto, I've seen this many times. So, yeah, it seems to be something to deter birds from perching. It doesn't harm them anyway. They just won't land on it.
Katrina mentioned Cornwall there. Let me see, where's this one? I spend a lot of time in the southeast of England, and the gulls there rob people's food, including big sandwiches, from people's hands all the time, says Olga. Let me see, would any retailer security cameras have the gull event recorded so we could all see it? Possibly somebody has. We'll be on Crime Line with Philip Boucher Hayes in a couple of weeks' time. Did you see this gull? It was an extraordinary event. The people were left traumatised. The gull made off with a sandwich and a burger. Could you imagine Philip doing that?
You actually do Philip's
he'd be very
face
good.
As well.
No, Philip would be great. We get Philip on the case. The exact same thing happened to my wife a few weeks ago. She had exited McDonald's and was just about to bite into her burger when the dreaded gull swooped and robbed it, says John in Ballsbridge in Dublin. We've been besieged by a grey crow for 2 weeks banging our windows. What can we do? Well, that bird is probably attacking its own image.
Yes.
That's Unshkelela sort of thing.
Yeah, that's something that usually will stop naturally within the next few weeks. It's just while the breeding hormones are surging. They see a reflection and think it's a rival, and they will grow out of it.
There are notices all over Cornwall, this message says, warning of gulls snatching food. I lost a few Cornish pasties this way, says Alex. Did you have any Cornish pasties, by the way, when you were there?
Well, funny you should talk about Cornish pasties, because, yeah, I spent a good bit of time in Cornwall, and the gulls are incredibly cheeky there, because you've got all these beautiful seaside towns, and the one that I was in particular, where I had an incident with a gull, with a herring gull was St Ives, Derek.
Mm.
And there I was. St Ives is a beautiful town. It's got Portminster Beach on one end and it's got Porthmuir Beach on the other. And in the middle, there's the pier and a smaller little beach. And along that, there's a promenade, lots of little cafes and ice cream shops, loads of food and loads of gulls because they know that there is, you know, an abundance of food. People are buying pasties, Cornish pasties to take away. They're buying ice cream and ice cream cones. They're buying all sorts of food and they're eating them at outdoor tables. And in my case, I got myself a beautiful traditional Cornish pasty, lovely pie, steak, turnip, potato,
oh,
gravy.
Delicious.
Lovely, absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah, yeah, and decided I would sit with on the promenade, sort of on the wall edge with my legs dangling over the beach.
Oh,
and I'd have my pasty in the sun and it was absolutely lovely. And yes, I know probably Niall will tell me I was at fault. I was tempting the gulls.
Yeah, she was.
Probably was with my delicious...
Not just the gulls by the sound of the lovely picture you're painting.
My delicious pasty.
If only we had some chocolate body.
There I was, eating my pasty, minding my own business, having a lovely time, Derek, okay? I'd taken about two or three bites into it. And all of a sudden, bang, on the back of my head, and there's a sound that I heard, right, all circling above me, bang, on the back of my head, something hit me. And I lurched forward, I jerked forward, okay, dropping the pasty from my hand onto the beach below. And within a microsecond, not even 1 second, a microsecond, about a dozen gulls were on that pasty and it was gone. And it was a flyby and it was an orchestrated attack and it was a gang of organised criminals. And this gull had come in with its 2 feet, hit me on the back of the head, given me a tap, enough to make me just jerk forward, drop the pasty onto the beach, and they were on it and my lunch was gone. Simple as that.
Do you believe it was an orchestrated attack? Do you think, Niall, are birds capable?
Well, certainly herring gulls do live quite a social life and they do watch each other's cues. They do sometimes call each other when there's food. So it's possible. It's probably a crime of opportunity, I would say.
But still, it knew what it was doing. It banged her on the back of the head.
Yeah, absolutely.
It got the burger out of her mouth onto the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what's obviously happening in St. Ives, there's obviously been a long tradition of people going there on holidays and perhaps feeding the birds to begin with. But the gulls have obviously learned to associate humans with
Katrina, it's a conundrum. It's a bit like the nursery rhyme, as I was going to St. Ives. It's a conundrum too.
Yes.
Because
yes,
how many people were actually going to St. Ives? How many people were going to St. Ives? Have a listen.
As I was going to St. Ives, I met a man with 7 wives.
You met a man with 7 wives.
And every wife had 7 sacks. Every sack had 7 cats. Every cat had 7 kittens. Kittens, cats, sacks, wives. How many were going to St. Ives?
You mean how many were going to St. Ives?
How many were going to St. Ives?
Okay, that's the riddle. How many were going to St. Ives?
How many were going to St. Ives? You can text 51551. Katrina can tell us after this break. So remember, we want to know how many people, it's not as simple as you think, were going to St. Ives in the old English nursery rhyme. As I said, it's a bit of a conundrum because you don't really know, do you? It's a bit of a difficult question. Anyway, Mike wants to know, what sort of people eat in the street anyway? It's bad manners, says Mike. Just about everybody I know, to be perfectly honest with you. Do you eat on the street? You do, Katrina?
Well, I did, yeah.
Brendan, did you eat on the street?
I'm on the run.
No, did you eat on the street?
Rarely, but I did today for professional reasons.
Oh, really? I forgot. He's trained as a lawyer originally. Yeah.
As I was going to St. Ives, I met a man with 7 wives.
You met a man with 7 wives.
And every wife had 7 sacks. Every sack had 7 cats. Every cat had 7 kittens. Kittens, cats, sacks, wives. How many were going to St. Ives?
You mean how many were going to St. Ives?
How many were going to St. Ives?
Okay, that's the riddle. How many were going to St. Ives?
Now, you think it's easy and you're texting in 51551. Angela Hickey says, one, Derek, the rest were coming back. Well, how do you know, Angela, the rest were coming back? The narrator says, as I was going to St. Ives, I met a man with 7. Doesn't say they were on the way back.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say they were on the way there. Doesn't say they were just stopped on the side of the street having a chat, having a cup of tea. He just said he met this man with 7 wives and 7 sacks and 7 sacks and 7 cats and 7 cats and 7 kittens. Kids, cats, sacks, wives, and many were going at the same time. He doesn't say they weren't going. So, we don't know.
He doesn't say they weren't.
2,402 going to St. Ives, says Avril Heffernan. What kind of multiplication is that?
Well, 2,802 is another answer. Huh? Yeah, 2,802 is one of the plausible answers. There are so many answers to this riddle that could be correct, that all are going to St. Ives. When you multiply it all out, that it comes to 2,802.
Well, you multiply what by what? So you multiply the man by the first seven wives, by the seven cats, by the seven sacks, by the seven kittens.
The sacks don't count, do they?
Well, then there's another. There's more ambiguity because the let me see. What are in the sacks again? So the cats are in the sacks,
and the cats have kits.
So how many were going to St. Ives? Well, were the cats and the kits going, or were they being taken? You know, were they going of their own free will? Or look, there are so many answers to this.
Well, even if they've been taken, they were still going.
Yeah.
But the cats mightn't necessarily just have one kitten, so you wouldn't be multiplying by seven just for kittens. Do you know, like each cat could have three or four kittens.
Brenda, the rhyme clearly states seven cats at seven kits.
Okay.
So, I mean, don't be putting imaginary figures in there that aren't the things that didn't happen. No, it clearly states how many he met, what he met along the way. Mm. But where are they going is the conundrum.
And of course, another
we'll
answer.
We'll have a row over this.
Another answer is two. So, you know, as I was going to St. Ives, I met a man. And if you
He may have just been on his own. He told him that he had seven wives. He told him about the seven sacks and the seven cats and the seven kits.
Interesting conversation, wouldn't it have been?
So, I suppose the safest answer is at least one person.
Well, if he had seven wives now, what religion would he have been if he was allowed to have seven wives? The Amish can have more than one wife, can't they? The Amish?
I don't believe so, actually. I don't know.
They can. Well, change my religion. Anyway, let me see. I was going to St. Ives. One, says Ruth, another one there. Apart from the writer, stroke the narrator, none, says Ken Gallagher in Macroom. So he reckons there's only one. One, says Philip Harty. One, all the others are coming from St. Ives. Still listening for answer from M&S, Brenda Farrell. Brenda, no, that's not true. We have checked with M&S. And M&S said, no, not true. We didn't close the rooftop cafe. And by the way, you'd be welcome in. They're looking forward to meeting everybody in the rooftop cafe. It'll cost you, but you're still welcome in. McDonald's aren't on to sue me yet about saying that they're employing the gulls. I assume it's a trick question, so only one was going to St. Ives. Everyone else he met was coming from St. Ives. See, everybody's assuming that's a Stephen in Dublin. P.S. I can't imagine anyone I know eating on the street, and I know quite a few people. Surprised you would, Derek.
Oh, dear.
You're amazed what I would do on the street. But what is the problem with eating on the street?
I think eating and walking is a bit rude.
Everybody.
In a way, I'm just saying that is what people sometimes think. You'd probably agree, would you, Niall?
Not necessarily, no. I think, you know, teach their own, I'd say. It's not a huge problem.
Have you never had a banana walking down the road?
I have, of course.
Yeah. And what have you done with the banana skin?
I've thrown it there for somebody to fall on.
No, what have you done with the banana skin?
I picked it up and put it in the bin.
Why? All right. No, I'm just wondering. Lots of people eat fruit walking down the road.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's any problem with eating going down the road.
Well, there's nothing nicer than sitting out of a sunny evening and having
your tea
outside.
Sure, isn't a barbecue like eating on the street?
It is, yeah. It's like a caveman thing, yeah.
You see lots of people eating ice creams this time of year on the street. That's perfect.
I know. Brenda was talking to people about how they eat their ice cream.
They're 99. Morning.
They're 99.
Thing. Everybody's a different technique
for eating,
eating it.
We'll hear about it later on.
Yep.
Anyway, answer is 9, says Kieran Grimes in Drumlish in County Longford. So how does he get 9? He says he met the man.
Yeah, because there are 9 people who might be going to St. Ives. The animals are all in the sacks. So they, as well as the sacks, are being taken rather than going. This all goes back to the, are they going to St. Ives or are they being taken to St. Ives?
Tell me, you were in St. Ives.
I was in
St. Ives. What is St. Ives like?
Oh, St. Ives is absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Like, we did a road trip all over Cornwall, stopping off in lots of little towns. Padstow, which is famous for Rick Stein
the fishery guy.
Yeah, and he has a takeaway fish and chip shop, and he has a cafe, and he has another cafe, and he has a high end fish restaurant, and then he has a delicatessen, and he's taken over the whole area. It's become a real foodie place. And I went to Port Isaac, which is a little fishing village where this very famous, well, they're not very famous perhaps, but this sea shanty group called Fisherman's Friends, they come from there, and every Friday during the summer they do a free concert in this little fishing village. And so we were there and got to see them the weekend before they played Glastonbury, and that was phenomenal. Went to see the Eden Project in Cornwall, which is very famous. Went down to Land's End, almost down to Land's End, where they have what's called the Manac Theatre, which is an outdoor theatre built into the side of a cliff.
Yeah.
And got to see a play there outdoors at night with the sun setting, and it was beautiful.
And so, how did you get there? You didn't cycle. You see, you're supposed to cycle from John O'Groats to Land's End.
Yeah, no, I didn't cycle. No, I had a van. We were camping the whole time, so we had a van to throw all the camping equipment into the back of.
So you did all that, and was the play interesting? Was it good?
The play was fantastic, yeah. I mean, it could have been any play. we just wanted to go to this theatre and experience an outdoor theatre. And it's absolutely beautiful, as you can imagine, looking out onto the ocean on one side and looking down into the theatre. It's like an old amphitheatre. That's how it's built. Really, really beautiful.
And the sound of the waves not be very noisy at times.
Absolutely soothing and beautiful to see them crashing up onto the rocks beside you. It was
and
gorgeous.
You can still hear everything that's being said.
And you can still hear, yeah, because they have speakers. They have speakers throughout the theatre, right up into the upper tiers. So you can hear everything and you're looking down below. And it starts off, at this time of year, it's quite bright. But by the end of the play, it was dark.
It's dark, yeah.
Yeah, and so the atmosphere was kind of building and growing. It was absolutely gorgeous. Now, Cornwall was a beautiful place to go to. And of course, if you're into food in any way, you'll come back a stone heavier because they're famous for their Cornish cream tea. What are you trying to say?
I wasn't saying anything.
Cornish cream teas. And pasties. They're famous for their pasties and everybody eats pasties. I mean, you could have them for breakfast, lunch and tea.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous.
Now, Oggy, Oggy, Oggy.
Yes. Oggy, Oggy, Oggy. This chant, actually, I didn't know this before I went to Cornwall, but Oggy, 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 the chant. You hear this at sports events and you hear it, the scouts use it, you hear it at music festivals. And this Oggy, Oggy, Oggy chant, oi, 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 that's the response, comes from Cornwall.
Hmm.
Because the slang word for a Cornish pasty is actually an oggy. And this comes from the Cornish name hoggin. Going back years ago, a hoggin was a Cornish pasty. And so when the sailors were all coming into port and they were hungry, the pasty makers, the ladies would all stand there and they would shout, oggy, oggy, oggy. And if a hungry sailor wanted one, he'd shout, oi, oi, oi. And this is how, this is the story of how the chant came to be. And it ended up kind of going into the sports field because in the 1960s, the English football clubs kind of took it on board. But it got really famous in the 1970s because Max Boyce, who you'll remember, was a Welsh folk singer.
With his leek.
And he was a comedian and he had a leek and he was big into Welsh rugby.
He had a giant leek, I should
and all this sort of a thing. But he used to start off his live shows with this to get the crowd going.
Yeah. Oggy, oggy, oggy. Oi, oi, oi.
And this is what, and the Aussies have taken it over now and they sing Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. In fact, the song that we're hearing now, we might play it from the start. This is Max Boyce and this is Max Boyce singing the Oggy song and it's all about Oggy Land, which is another name for a Cornwall.
Well, we have a listen to it. It's a summer's day.
Yeah, why not?
What else would you be doing?
Nothing.
Licking your ice cream, I suppose.
Butter. Just enough for me and the lads. Corbagger Jagger.
Oh, how happy we shall be when us gets back to the West Country, where tatty oggies grow on trees. And we'll all go back to Oggy Land, to Oggy Land, to Oggy Land. And we'll all go back to Oggy Land, where they can't tell sugar from tissue paper.
And again.
And we'll all go back to Oggy Land, to Oggy Land, to Oggy Land. And we'll all go
hi, Derek. My mother-in-law was in the Mater Hospital a number of years ago. I went to visit her around lunchtime. I moved her table out of the way over towards the window with the lunch on it while I got her out of the bed onto a chair. In an instant, a huge seagull landed on the windowsill, came in the open window and took the roast beef off her plate and flew off with it. Now, what do you think of that, says Paula? What do you think of that, Niall?
I think gulls being opportunistic. Saw the food there and said, why not?
Yeah, exactly. And lots of people are saying one. Was going to St. Ives. By the way, when you're in St. Ives, are there any plaques or anything saying the home of the nursery rhyme as I was going to St. Ives? I mean, it's famous. We had the Muppet Show characters reciting it there.
Oh, yes, true. No, I didn't notice anything about the nursery rhyme, no. But I did notice some pasty shops, going back to Oggie, a new key in Cornwall. They have a pasty shop called Oggie's Pasty Shop, so they make a big deal of the pasties. But I didn't see them making a big deal of the nursery rhyme, no.
All right, well, Niall and Katrina, thank you very much indeed. So Niall, you can go back to your day job. Yay. With Birdwatcher. And anything interesting happening out there at the moment?
It's very busy for us at the moment, especially with the turns on Rockabilly Island and at Kilcool and Baltray. It's been a bumper year for all of them, which is really good news. Often we have conservation, you know, bad news to share on the show, and but it's good to talk about success for a change. Really
it is.
Good.
Tell me, how are the wardens working out?
They're really well. We have Brian and Dunica on Rockabilly at the moment, and they're getting on like a house on fire. And it's we picked two really good lads for it. They're really thriving out there.
And how many terns are nesting this year, do you know?
We have broken the numbers when it comes to roseate terns. We're 1,250 pairs of roseate terns, which is the most important species there. But there's about 2,500, give or take a few, common terns as well, and a few hundred Arctic terns, a few hundred kittiwakes as well, and some black guillemots. So it, on a tiny island, it's only 2 acres. The noise out there is absolutely deafening. It's, you know, a very interesting experience for these guys. It's the first time they've done this work, but they're thriving out. They have a wonderful blog about it, by the way. If you Google Rockablog, you'll find it there.
And Rockablog.
Keep you up to date with what's going on.
All right. Now, thank you very much. And Katrina, thank you. Now, I've got to correct something. Helen Byrne has been on to say, please correct the information you gave out about the Amish. They only have one wife. I said I thought they could have more than one wife, and I'd stand corrected. So thank you for that, Helen. Much appreciated. A gull fell off our roof and broke a leg landing on the patio. He is still in our back garden. We put out bread and water. What else do we need to do now, asks Jane. Well, I suppose you could contact the DSPCA and you could ask them would they help you out, or contact your local wildlife ranger. As I said, they are a protected species. Very hard. You could go to your local vet. I don't know how vets feel about animals being brought into them, wild animals, because who pays the bill? I'm not saying they're all mercenary, but I'm just saying who pays the bill. And they do tend to look after wild animals, in fairness to vets. But when an animal has a fracture, it breaks a leg, particularly a bird that damages its wing or something like that, the game is pretty much up unless you're going to care for it. I mean, I don't know how the success, what the success rate is when you try and fix said fractures, because they're so fragile. So I don't know what the answer is to that. You can do your best. You can go to the vet, as I said, contact the National Parks and Wildlife Service, see, get a number for a wildlife ranger in the area, or the DSPCA. Or if there's a local person, there's usually a local person who knows how to deal with these things, might be able to give you some advice. The answer is none. He is asking the question. It implies how many of them are going to St. Ives, says Stephen. But Stephen is saying there was nobody going. He's just asking you. Hi, Derek. The only person mentioned as going to St. Ives is the man walking. It is not said that the man with the sacks is going anywhere. He might have been standing at his gate wondering whether or not to go to St. Ives, says Eileen Casey in Dublin 15. This is the kind of thing that could drive you potty. But I'll guarantee you one thing. Tonight, the only thing people will be talking about the length and breadth of the country is how many blooming people were going to St. Ives on the Mooney Show this afternoon. Was it one? Was it none? Was it that man with the seven wives who isn't Amish? Because they can only have one wife, yeah. All right? And he's got a seven sacks, yeah. And he's got a seven cats, and he's got a seven kids, and somehow it sounds like the entire Muppet Show were with him. So if you count them, and then Brenda said maybe the kids were having kids when they grow. So look, it could go on forever. Hey, Derek, I live in Loughlinstown, and we don't hear gulls in this area, but this morning at 10 a.m, about five of them were squawking in the area. 24 years living here, and I've never heard this before. I'm wondering what has brought them inland. Regards, Yvonne. Well, they're moving inland and they're finding new places to nest. It's the first time I've noticed the herring gulls nesting on the rooftop of the television building. They may have been doing it for years, but this is the first time it was brought to our attention. So they may have been there, you just didn't notice them. Or maybe they've just found new nesting sites. Anyway, you're not that far from the sea if you think about it. Hi, Derek. My friend was in Dublin last Friday with her friend. How many of them are going? No, it's not that. The very same thing happened to her with her burger. A gull flew by her and hit her in the face with his wing and then took the burger, says Fran O'Sullivan. Derek asks Noel, do gulls steal for a lark? Where's my bell?
No bell.
Anne Berg from Dublin. In my school, Loretto Balbriggan, seagulls steal people's lunches most days. The school has even resorted to putting fake seagulls on the roof to scare them away. It hasn't worked, she said. Well, actually, I remember dealing with a case in Ballantyre years ago, and these people had a pond, and in the pond they had carp. And you know, carp can be quite expensive. These are fish, and these kind of ornamental carp, people pay, you can pay up to 100,000. I think some people have even paid 1 million pounds sterling, not euro, no, a million pounds sterling for some collectible carp. But at any rate, these people had a pond and they had carp and all sorts of goldfish and all sorts of things. And herons were popping by for lunch and picking off the carp, and it was easy picking. So what they did was they got a decoy. So they got a kind of plastic heron that was standing at the pond in the hope that no other herons would land, because they'd say, well, that guy's in there and he's fishing there and there's no point. Anyway, what did it do? Only attract all the other herons in. So it didn't work. Sometimes decoys work and sometimes they have the opposite effect.
Is there an increasing interest in that whole area now?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, nowadays there's a...